are the key to stopping an insider threat and preventing a cyber incident at your agency, even if you don't work in the IT department. Richard Steenen is host of the Security Current blog, founder of IT Harvest, and author of the book Surviving Cyber War. He says there are two categories of insider threats, and identifying the most dangerous kind depends on you.
From a compliance standpoint, you're thinking about the innocent threat, the lost laptop, misplaced phone that's got all the data on it, because that turns into embarrassment and wrist slapping. But from a technical and threat aspect, you should be worried about the malicious insider. And especially, you know, we used to warn when the economy's turning down and we're laying people off, that's the time to be most aware of this sort of thing. But unfortunately, we are relying, and I see this repeated over and over, inside the military as well as other federal agencies, we rely on the employment relationship, this trust that's built up. Hey, we know you're not going to, you know, break our procedures and do something silly like browsing pornography at work, because we're going to fire you if you do,
mm-hmm.
or some other disciplinary action. But anytime you see that the chain of security being interrupted with, and here it works because we trust people to do the right thing, that's where your problems are going to be. And so we have to turn the inside of our networks into these hardened cases that can't be abused without somebody being alerted at the very least. So blocking is good, but you can't always block everything for security purposes, because then everything breaks too. But at least alerting, and all the workers being aware that if they abuse their privileges, that somebody will see that, mm-hmm. you know, that it's being recorded. There's lots of great tools for recording activity either on the desktop or on the network. And that's the best tool for enforcing a acceptable use policy, for instance, is just everybody's knowledge that they can't get away with it, as Snowden and Bradley Manning did.
I had an IT security person say not too long ago, in hindsight, certainly this silver lining doesn't make up for all the damage that Manning and Snowden did, but the silver lining is that the internal discussion vis-a-vis the dollars has shifted away from explaining return on investment when it comes to cybersecurity.
Right.
It used to be that the financial officers, not just inside government but in the private sector, would say, well, we haven't been hit yet, so why should I give you a couple million dollars for this, whatever the security action is that the CIO or the CISO wants to take? That conversation has gone away. Is that necessarily a good development? And I'm certainly not suggesting, as I said, that one makes up for the other.
Yeah, so and breaches have always been used the same way, and targeted attacks also the same way. If you can demonstrate that you're under attack from an adversary, then the budget questions go away and people just fix the problem. But having two cases that you can say happened over there in the intelligence community, or the military, is still going to run into that problem that, you know, somebody at Health and Human Services or the EPA is still going to act the same way. Well, we don't have things that are worth leaking, so we don't have to worry about insider threats. But that's obviously not the case. If you've got tens of thousands of employees at any one time, any one of them could become disgruntled. If they touch sensitive information, any one of them could be blackmailed or fall into honeypots, and they could become a significant threat. So that's why the controls have to be put in place. And I hope that the Bradley Manning and Snowden case can be, you know, just used to bring that to the forefront and just ask the question, hey, what level of privileged access do our system administrators have? Are they looking at the health records? Are they looking at our financial records and budgetary stuff, even though their job is to configure our servers so that they work? What else can they do without being traced?
I talk in this program a lot about the avalanche of big data that federal agencies are taking in now. They're getting better at understanding what they have, but a lot of them still say, we have tons of stuff coming in and we're not even, it's not possible, I suppose, to think of all the ways that you can connect the dots in a roundabout way that doesn't seem obvious on the surface, but that can yield the kind of information that a hacker would love to get, and that somebody within an agency might not know that if you saw this and you saw this and you saw this, you can add them together and get, you know, 1 + 1 + 1 makes 6.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that's one area where the bad guys will always have an advantage over the good guys. And I wonder if you're seeing any progress in the big data analysis in the private sector that might apply in the federal space.
Absolutely. I'm seeing some amazing tools that take security events and network traffic and just they can blow it up real big on a screen, and then you can drill way in on particular incidents and create all the correlations for you. I've seen big data applied to, commercial records and transactions and things. And now I'm starting to see it apply to actually to threat vectors, and it's really exciting to watch happen.
How is that? I understand what you're talking about where that is today. It sounds like that could be a building block, though, for the future, for agencies to be able to build on as they go through the CDM regime and other things.
Completely. I think it really would add to the CDM regime to do that level of continuous analysis of all the traffic and all the behaviors on the network, because it gives you the alarm bells go off immediately if something untoward happens.
Richard Steenan is founder of IT Harvest and executive editor of the Security Current site that we have linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're a couple of months out now from Heartbleed. What should we learn in retrospect about what we saw because of Heartbleed, Richard?
Well, we certainly learned that the community, such as it is, of people that maintain certificates for web servers can react very, very quickly. So we saw that as expected. We saw those that are active in maintaining their sites reacted very, very quickly. It was probably 80% of the problem disappeared within the first week of knowing the problem was there. And now we're going to see the long tail of it. From now on, we'll see, websites that aren't used very often but happen to be a great target for an attacker, still being vulnerable to the Heartbleed bug, and they'll extract information off that website from the occasional user that uses it. So I think, I was quite pleased that the disclosure process too, right? So there's this whole concept of responsible disclosure. The researchers at Google and a security firm, kind of co-discovered it, and they didn't work real closely together, but they worked with the community, the SSL, OpenSSL community, to come up with a date when they had to tell everybody and get that information out. So they actually work very, very well.
Should we be heartened by the discovery of Heartbleed and the response to it, or should we be worried because there may be more out there that we don't know of?
We always have to be worried because guaranteed there are lots out there that we don't know of. And especially since the Heartbleed bug could not have been detected with the software assurance tools I've been talking about, because it kind of is more of a logic problem than anything else. And finding those in code is extremely difficult.
One concept that you and I have talked about in the past, especially regarding federal agencies' cyber defenses, is the inability so far to get far enough ahead of the curve where you can be proactive rather than reactive. Is it your sense that we're seeing progress in that area where, whether it's with the tools that we've talked about that agencies have or without them just because of their own efforts, are they making progress in your view as far as getting out in front of potential threats and being able to be proactive?
So very interesting using those terms proactive and reactive, because just in the last 18 months, the industry has flip-flopped the importance of those. So now it's important to be reactive, but in a very, very fast way. So the agencies are still on the old track where they're trying to get better at being proactive. So better IPS, better firewalls, and they got a lot of catching up to do there. But the cutting edge industries are looking at, okay, we've done everything we can proactively. Now let's get really good at detecting as soon as somebody's broken through our defenses and reacting fast enough to prevent damage. So it's still, it's just shortening that mean time to response that we're talking about.
We're just about out of time. We've covered a lot of landscape in our conversations over the last several days. Richard, what should we think about moving forward that we haven't discussed yet?
So I think we have to step back and think about what a digital Pearl Harbor actually would mean, the way that that has been brought up in conversation by a lot of officials is, you know, a Katrina-like embarrassing lack of government response to an emergency.
That's Richard Steen, and host of the Security Current blog, a security analyst at IT Harvest and author of the book Surviving Cyber War. You can hear my conversation with Richard at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon.